So there's a global pandemic. A virus is sweeping across our world. Still, and society has changed. Why is this happening? Is the vaccine one dose now, or still two? If you were skeptical of the vaccine, would you change your mind for the chance at $400,000? If you haven't answered these questions, you will soon. And we'll be here with you, your personal guides on this journey, this descent into chaos. Thank you for joining us on Staring at Goats.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for another episode of Staring at Goats, the show that brings you the latest COVID news. We share our pain. We share our happiness. We share our despair. We share negative things and good things. We share all these things with each other, like a good community of emotional... We're an emotional cornucopia, you may say. And we come together every week to chat about what's going on in our lives, what's going on in the world at large, and try to bring a little levity, when possible, to the whole idea that we're all stuck inside, desperately trying to cling to anything to keep us sane. Scratch. We're looking at all the new scratches we've made on the walls as we've been climbing them, trying to escape this mortal coil, yet knowing that somewhere on the other end there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm your host, Steven, joined as always by the amazing, the wonderful, Jacob.
Woo-woo! Who completely started the recording late.
Okay. You know what?
Do we want to redo the intro or no?
No, we're good now. We're good. I worked so hard on that. Are you kidding me?
I mean, we can do it. I mean, I missed Travis's intro. I mean, I feel like we need to hear that intro.
We'll do it. We'll fix it in post.
Fix it in post.
Gosh, what kind of producer are you? Fix everything in post. We're basically, all right, so let's lay down the law for everybody here, because everybody who shows up, they're like, what the devil is going on? Where is Steven? Why is the background wrong? What is going on with this audio? Well, the thing is, we went from flying around the orbiting HQ to we fired up this old Winnebago we had in a barn, and we're like, is the baby still running? It's like, sort of. So it's this rolling meth lab of COVID news. Down through the waves of the internet, so just bear with us, okay? We're doing the best we can. And we're also joined on the other side here by the incredibly talented, the wonderful, the instigator, the bearded TV's Travis.
Hello.
So here
Rolling
we are.
Rolling meth lab of COVID news. Might be the best description I've ever heard of anything.
New tagline. We did it. Time for season two.
Yes.
Are we in season two yet? Because I feel like we're past season two and on to like season four. I mean, if it was Mandalorian seasons, we'd be on like season seven right now.
Oh, yeah. We have jumped the shark. That's for sure. Everybody's done with this. They're like, wait, yeah. They were cool when the mask talk was popular, but now it's just rolling around in anguish every week together. Like, we're all just huddled up in a ball of flesh. And I'm real positive. I got a lot to bring up on this show.
I'm good.
Yeah, but first of all, I don't want to start with me. I think we started with me last week. I'd much rather hear what our Michigan correspondent, Travis, has to say about his life in COVID for the last week.
Well, I actually had first false spring of the year. Earlier this week, it got to a balmy 44 degrees, I saw, because I had to drive into town, and I went past the power company, and they have a thermometer outside. I thought, 44 degrees, and it's sunny out. This is really nice. Yeah, today was 30 and wind. So we're back to winter, and I feel as though I'm going to get through winter okay. But if spring, whenever that happens, into summer... goes too much longer of the whole, I haven't left my county in 18 months. I'm going to maybe lose it. So, you know.
So it's the springtime is kind of your social get to see everybody time. And that's when you'll start to feel it again.
Yeah. And it's because like all winter is basically I'm just stuck inside.
Yeah.
And it can't get out at all. And I literally haven't left the county I live in since December of 2019.
Ooh.
And that was when I had a work trip that took me to New York City. Like, that was the last time I was out of the county. So I'm just getting that cabin fever setting in. I just want to be able to do something. And hopefully it'll be okay to move about and at least, you know, maybe take a day trip somewhere. Even just go for a long drive. I don't care. Just something to change the scenery. I love my house, but since I've moved in, I haven't left it.
I mean, you're on like day 430 or something like that. So, I mean, what's wrong with you, Travis? It only took you 430 days to break.
I'm weak. What can I say?
That, you know, you bring up an interesting point, though. Like, when we hit springtime last year, when COVID was first firing off, I'm not going to use the word exciting. But it was like something we were just, it was a thing we were going to do. It wasn't like we were going to be locked into it forever. We thought for sure we'd be out of it. And this year, moving into spring, it's more annoying because you're like, we haven't been anywhere. And spring is now when we want to go out. And I feel like that's having an effect on folks, yourself included.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I've held it together pretty well, and I'll be fine until spring hits. But if I get too far into spring or summer and it's still like, you know, you can't go anywhere, it's really not a good idea to do things, I will start to crumble a lot more. And quickly, it'll be at a geometric rate. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And you live in Michigan, so you have more time. You have more time than the rest of us for spring. Like, you've got till May-ish. Before spring matters.
Yeah, so, pretty much. I mean, like I said, we had our first fall spring. I've got at least two or three kind of false starts on spring before it finally takes hold.
Yeah.
But sure. You've been in Michigan for all your life, right? So,
yes.
I mean, this is nothing new, the fall start. It's the being locked in your home during the fall starts over and over. That's really what it is, where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like Steven said, you know, a year ago, it was, well, okay, we're gonna stay inside, we're gonna stay away. All right, fine, you know, I can deal with that. It should be fine by fall, right? No, and it didn't get a whole lot better. So yeah,
absolutely. Well, that brings us to Jacob. I don't know how that brings us to Jacob, but it does.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's his turn.
It's my turn.
We're going around the round table today.
I mean, since you're at the beach, I feel like you need to go last because you're the one who's not staring at the same four walls and sitting in the same chair.
YOLO!
Yeah. I got an interesting, well, maybe not interesting, it's an awful story, but it's gotten me to think a little bit this week. And in my moments of reflection around COVID leading into this this podcast, I always think about, you know, what am I going to talk about this week? Because this has happened and this has happened and this is important. And this is what I've been dealing with. And you know, what should I chat about? And I still go to work on occasion. I mean, I probably go to the office maybe one day a week whenever I have some things that I need to handle in the office. But it's not very frequently. I work from home most days. But every once in a while, I do have to go in. And I was working in one of the labs for just a little while, and a buddy of mine happened to just pop in the front door of the lab, and he stood at the front door, and he just chatted with me for a little bit. We were social distance, and we were wearing masks because we're forced to at the building anyway, so we don't have to think about not doing it. It's mandatory, regardless of where you're at, which is kind of, it's an interesting policy, but I think I'm down with it. Anyway. That's neither here nor there. He was telling me a story about his sister, and his sister has two kids, and they're a little bit older. They're 17, 18, 19 years old. So, I mean, it's older as in high school type of kids, not necessarily young kids. And one of them is a division. Well, one of them just started his freshman year playing hockey at a Division I school, and the other is a senior in high school, and he's playing hockey in high school for the varsity team. And they both got COVID because he described them as his idiot redneck family. and that was how he described it. And so they're the non-mask wearing folks, and they go out and they do what they want, and they all got COVID, and none of them had any symptoms. And however, the youngest child, the senior in high school, who's varsity hockey, got actually removed from varsity hockey because he no longer has the stamina, the wind to actually play varsity hockey anymore. He can't make it a full line's worth of time in the game. So he is he actually got put back on JV, and so now his college scholarship's thrown out the window. His where he's going to go to school is now up in question. He's having to revisit all of those questions because he just doesn't have the same lung capacity that he had. And he's over there killing himself trying to work out and exercise to try to build up his lung capacity again, just so that he can get back to a point where he could compete. But right now, he just simply cannot compete. And of course, they're blaming on it everything else other than COVID. But at the end of the day, it's a high likelihood that COVID is the reason why he has this decreased lung capacity. And it's really affecting his life and what's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years. A guy who was on trajectory to play with his brother in Division I hockey is now on course to not play hockey at all and not go to the same school and potentially have to seek an alternative career choice or a career path, because all of that's now called into question. So it got me thinking about, you know, are we doing the right things here? And in my mind, yeah, I mean, we can argue back and forth whether or not we think we're doing the right thing. But, you know, when kids have to start making those decisions because of an illness that they got or because of a virus that they got, by potentially no fault of their own, especially when we're talking about, let's say, younger kids that are 10 or 12, who are just now starting to get into athletics and realize that they can't compete because they have decreased wind lung capacity. And so now they just stop playing sports because they can't compete with the rest of the kids or infants or, I mean, I think about the whole range of children, and I'm just going, you know something, if we don't figure out the kids and vaccines and doing something about them getting COVID, we could have a generation of kids that are going to have long-term issues, not only growing up, but will alter the course of their lives forever if they're not able to do the things that they had traditionally done or wanted to do. So that's kind of what I've been contemplating. I mean, I'm not down in the dumps about it, but I've been thinking about this, and I'm trying to understand, you know, number one, how long is it going to take? And number two, what's the right step for children next? I mean, I got almost a one-year-old over here, and, you know, I don't know what to do. So that's kind of what's been going on through my brain.
My thing about people and this, like, COVID denial and then having life-changing consequences, like, you're just ignoring everything. And you're getting these consequences that are real.
Yeah.
And they're bad and they're terrible, but they told you not to do the things you did, and you did it.
That's right.
They say don't drink and drive. And if you get in an accident, wrap your car around the pole, and you can't walk, the story is still, you shouldn't have drunk and drive. Yeah. That doesn't mean I don't have empathy and feel sorry for their situation, but it was caused by you. I feel different kind of sorry for you than I would somebody that was, you know, impacted negatively by your action. Somebody else that didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is, that kid, bless his heart, I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah.
But you did things that were wrong. You know, you can't go to college and throw a COVID party. Not saying that's what he did. I'm just getting on my soapbox. You can't go to college and go, I'm throwing a COVID party so we all get sick and don't have to worry about it anymore. And then be like, oh, I can't be on the swim team because I can't hold my breath anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you expect? You rolled those dice and you've changed your life. You didn't just lose a little bit of money, which you can make back. They make more money.
Sure. Money's not the issue.
You lost health. Yeah. Which they don't give you back. Life doesn't change. You make mistakes in life and, like, cut your foot off with a chainsaw because you're being unsafe. Your foot's gone. Like, can't put that back on. Mm-hmm. It's not you have to treat your life like the sacred thing that it is and care for it and watch out for it and make sure that you don't do these kinds of things. These stories are sad, but they're frustrating in equal parts.
Well, and the opportunities are lost, right? I mean, we're talking about opportunities that a person may have to play Division I hockey and potentially make it to the next level. No longer. Go to a Division I school, an upper-tier school, and have exposure to different opportunities within a university setting that maybe now he's not going to get those same opportunities, right? He may have to go to a technical school or a technical college, and it might change or alter his trajectory of his life without even, I mean, you'll never know what the difference would be because clearly you'll, I mean, you can't ever know if the decisions are right, but I'm not going to necessarily fault him. I mean, just think about the environment that he's in. I mean, he's potentially in an environment where he thinks it's okay, not because he's done the research, but because his family or he's exposed to it, or this is what his people around him have decided. Not necessarily he's decided. So I don't even know the situation, but those are the kind of thoughts that are going through my head, is that maybe he didn't have any say in it. Maybe he was the person who was like, oh shoot, I don't want to get sick. Damn it, my whole family got sick and I got sick too. Shit. You know, I don't know the situation and I'm not going to try to guess, but you know, I guess I go back to the 14-year-olds who really don't have a say in it, or the 12-year-olds, or the 7-year-olds, or the 2-year-olds.
And that's more pressure on us as parents.
It's tough.
To be educated so that we protect them from the bullcrap. That's our only job.
Yeah, that's true.
It's our only job. We can't keep them from making bad decisions on their own, but we can give them the tools they need to make good ones. Yeah. We can be there to make sure that they don't get sick. If we know, like, we can look it up and be like, what danger does this pose for my family? Maybe I'll just won't do these things because they say not to do them. They say not to go out and lick doorknobs. I'm not going to go lick doorknobs because I could bring it back and give it to my kid and change his life forever. I'm 55 years old. I'm nearly dead. But my kid, he's got a long way to go. And I just jacked him up by being an idiot.
Yeah.
Shame. Shame on those people. That's what I say. I'll wag my finger.
There you go.
But I get where you're coming from. It's you really, really think about it, the altered trajectory of everything. Because every person plays a role in this weird web of society, right? And you wonder, like, okay, well, he's not going to play hockey anymore. So what's the thing that's going to get affected otherwise? And we look at it's like multiple endings to your favorite video game, like some sort of pathway. It's not really how it works. But hey, after I invent my reality warping portal, we can go through and see what happened.
There you go. We can see all the alternate timelines.
Yeah, what happened otherwise, you know? And then we can kill our other selves and absorb their power. Which
I've seen that movie.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Well, thank you, Jacob. Thank you for bringing that up. It definitely lends. There's a lot to think about in those cases.
I don't know if I should be thanked for bringing that up. I mean, I feel like every week I'm the one that just Donnie Downers everything.
Well, it's rude to kick you off the show for it. So we just say thank you, sir. May I have another?
I mean, you can kick me off the show if you want. I don't mind. Believe me, 47 weeks of COVID is about to drive me nuts.
The truth isn't that you don't get kicked off. The truth is that we forget after 7 days. Yeah. And then just go through the whole cycle again. It's just a constant cycle of forget and oh, that's right. He brings the downers. And then 2 days later,
can't wait to hear what Jacob's got for the roundtable today.
Next week, baby. Next week, I am bringing the good news. I am bringing the heat.
Well, it's too early to bring any good news now, so I'm going to just keep rolling down this therapeutic line of conversation where we all think about sad things. I have been in the funkiest funk. The funky, like, foot in the shoe for 6 weeks running a marathon kind of funk. For probably, like, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm grumpy. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to be at home. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to go anywhere. This is very out of character for me. So, naturally, the person that I am, I start doing some introspection. Start looking in. Let's figure this out. Let's work through it. Let's push away the muck and the mire and see where in here the problem is. And I've come across a few things. But one thing struck me as I was venturing into the inner depths of my psyche, which is a scary place, and I don't think anybody should ever be invited there. Like, we can all stay surface level. I love you all too much. But the thing that's been getting at me is the social structure of my life. I'm not an extrovert per se. I'm kind of a shy extrovert. The right people energize me and make me feel whole. Because you often hear people, introvert is shy and extroverts are outgoing. That's not really the truth. Introverts just get energized with isolation. Extroverts are energized by time with other people. So I'm at a point where I think I've realized that I get energized from different sets of people in different scenarios continuously. I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
I tell stories. I talk to people. I enjoy conversation. And I get different, like, I get conversation with you that I don't get with Travis. That I get with Travis that I don't get with you. That I get with other friends, Lando, for instance, that I don't get with other people. And those kinds of things kind of fuel they fill my cup, so to speak. And I'm at a point now in COVID where it's been a year since I've had a casual, unscheduled conversation with friends at work. And work is a big part of your life. It's 8 hours of your day, Monday through Friday, to do stuff and to hang out. There's like a mixture there, water cooler and everything. And I was taking a look, and I'm like, every conversation I've had with even a friend at the office has been in the context of a meeting to talk about something that needs to get done. It hasn't been just rolling the chair back and going, "See, Mitch, what are you doing over there? Let's go for a walk." It's not wandering into the break room and seeing a random buddy I don't really see and just going, "Hey, man, what's up? How are you?" And I don't know how to get at that, but I'm finding that seems to be a thing, because bless Stephanie's heart, she loves me and I love her, but she's the only person I can tell my random factoids and nonsense to most of the day. And she has to listen to a 6-year-old do the same thing most of the day. So by the time I get to her, she's like, "He's yours. I'm going to bed."
Like, goodbye.
But it feels that way. Sometimes you feel that way. You're like, okay, I got him. You go rest, you know? And most of the time it's me saying, like, "You go rest. You look spent. Go hang, you know, go get some rest and I'll take care of this." And then we pass each other like ships in the night at times, for a day or two. And it's like, well, now I want to tell you stuff, but the stuff I want to tell you is like, "Did you hear there's a new Spider-Man title movie coming out with the Spider-Man in the title?" And like, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares. So I go to Discord. I'm trying to, like, I'll type in Discord. "Did anybody see this cool news?" And text does not satisfy what you need.
Nope.
It does not satisfy what you need. Cameras barely do it, because I'm looking at this camera. If I'm looking at this camera, I'm not looking at you. If I'm looking at you, I'm not looking at the camera. Yep. And we can't connect on eye level on conversation like real humans. And I'm starting to feel like that. What's that hierarchy of needs? Social. You need to boogie. You need to hang. You need to be under a tree. Something like that. I don't know.
I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Something like that. You need to eat a pie. But
Maslow's hierarchy of need, right?
Right. Maslow. Cool guy. I like hanging out with him. Yeah. But yeah, the social need is vastly broken. At this point. And because the social need's broken, and it's a pretty large pillar of me as a human being, everything else is kind of wonky, just out of sorts. Like, I went out with some friends to see them and sit in the garage outside in the freezing cold just to talk to someone else, and it was just temporary. It didn't fix anything. It was a temporary joy, but it wasn't the same kind of joy because of the black cloud of COVID and anxiety just over top of it. And you're like, I should be having fun. And I am, to a degree. But it's not the kind of, Jacob, you referenced this with Anthony and Wally swinging by. You're like, I want to have fun with you guys on the back porch, but I can't, because I can't just sit here casually, comfortably knowing this is a good idea. We're all, you know, it's like, this is probably a bad idea. We're outside, we're taking care of business, but I'm tired of feeling like my interactions with other people is risky.
Yeah,
I guess that's my, I'm at the breaking point on that particular thing. And I don't know what to do about it. I don't know that anything can be done about it. I don't know that I think I'm just going to have to learn how to be a monk a little bit and just go sit quietly in a corner and just sit there and go, no one cares about Spider-Man's title but you, and it's okay.
Oh, no.
No one has to care.
Well, Steven, I have a suggestion. When you get off work, you don't go downstairs. You actually give me a call, and I'll go and take the baby, and I'll send Ashley out. And you guys could have 5 minutes telling each other the cool stories of the day. And just be like, did you hear about Spider-Man? No, no, no. Did you hear about Zelda? Did you hear about the Diablo announcement? Did you hear about... And you could do that for like 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, hit the end button. Then go back in and be like, hey, Stevie, how are you?
You know what? You do joke, but you might be, because I feel like you might be on the end that Stephanie's in. Like, I just don't know if I can listen to the shenanigan. I just got off the hardest phone calls of my day, and I don't know if I can do it. So I'd be doing you a favor, wouldn't I? I'd be letting Ashley come in here and tell me all the cool stories she learned for the day, and I'll be like, did you hear? And we won't even listen to each other. We'll just say the things at each other, casually agree, and then feel like we both got everything we needed.
That's exactly right. It's casual agreement. It's not necessarily I'm listening, I'm just casually agreeing with you and moving on to my old thing. No, so it's interesting that you talk about this, because Ashley and I have a very similar type of relationship. I mean, when I get off work, I usually take the drive home to relax and chill out. That's how it was. But it's got to the point, it got to the point where I would call her on the way home. And the reason why was not because, oh, I have to quit call. It was because I needed her to get it out and get it out on the phone with me on the way home. And I could just zone it out and drive and just be like, oh, and she is just going a million miles a minute. But by the time I get home, it's not just a jump on you and just nail you with 48,000 facts. And in person, it's different. On the phone, it's a little bit different, right? So I'm just like, okay, the phone is a lot better. So I'm just going to listen and just let her get it out, and I can enjoy the conversation, and I can tune in, tune out, tune in, because I'm driving, and that's how I dealt with it. So I think we're onto something here, Steven. We've got a small fix. It's not going to fix all of the other, you know, hierarchy of needs things with friends, but at least it might get you past a hump that you need.
It could help. I've considered, like, even at work, just like opening up a Google Meet with my team and just being like, this isn't for anything. This is just, I'm going to be sitting in here. And if anyone wants to just get in here and work quietly and just say things when they feel like it, that would be fine. Like, you'd almost feel like you're in an office. Or maybe I'll just start hanging out in a Discord voice chat during the day and just be like, I'm just going to sit in here and I don't have to talk to anybody. But if someone gets in and says, hey, man, what's going on? I could say, not much, working on a thing. And we can casually ignore each other or not. Oh, well, Jesse does the Google Meet thing. See, that's smart.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense, because that is something that isn't taken into account when you're stuck at home all the time, is the random casual encounter that you will have with somebody when you're out and about. You know, you happen to run into somebody when you're at the store and you talk to them for a little bit, just standing, you know, standing by the lettuce, or like you said, going into the break room and, hey, there's the guy that, you know, there's somebody that I don't talk to very often or chat with them. I used to, when I had my bad habit of smoking, that was one of those things, is you would go outside with somebody else and have 10 minutes to chat and then go back into work. So yeah, that is one, like, it's tough.
Yeah,
I do think the open Google Meet or Discord channel is not a bad idea. No phone, I'm not talking to you. I said the word. That was my problem.
You did. You said the magic word.
Alexa. Oh, wait. No. If I say Alexa too loud, everybody's machine will go off all at once. Alexa.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
No, you're right, though, Travis, because I've often been called by the people around me the mayor of the town, because inevitably, wherever I go, I will find somebody that I know. I don't know how this happens, but I could be in the middle of nowhere, and I'm like, oh, Jim, what the hell have you been up to? And Steven's looking at me going, we're in the middle of nowhere. How in the world do you know these people? And I'm like, I don't know. But I find people that I know, and I'm struggling with that as well, but I feel like the one day a week at work where people can come by and tell me about their family and what they're going through. And, you know, every once in a while I can have those, and they're not necessarily hallway chats because I really avoid that. But, you know, if I'm in the lab and somebody just pops in and says hi to me, it's, I at least get some of that interaction. If not, it definitely doesn't fill my cup, but it's enough to, I think, just get me to the next time I go in.
Yeah, it's a little splash in the cup.
Yeah,
just enough. Yeah. A little splash and go.
It's a shot of that scotch that I need to make it till next week, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's funny because I like we came to this beach house. I'm like, this will fix it. We'll just get out of our four walls for a little bit. We'll be here, and I really just brought all the stress that I have at home with me to a new place. Like, if I'm being honest about, it, I'm like, I get to look at the ocean and listen to it, and that's great. But like, all the extraneous things that still exist.
Yeah.
They're still here. But going to try to fix that tomorrow. Because I've been working this week, but tomorrow I'm off.
There you go.
Yeah. Because I was like, I like my job. Like, I really do. It's something that helps break up the monotony of this insane thing that we're dealing with. But I think tomorrow will be a good day. I'm going to go out, take Sam to a park or something early, and just try to get away.
Well, so the question on everybody's mind, how's the beach?
It's beautiful. It's flipping cold because it's February, but it's beautiful. There is water. There is sand. There's a nice view. It's been great. The Wi-Fi in this house is absolute garbage, but I've got 1 out of 5 ports that in the house where it's wired up that does work. So there's a 50-foot Ethernet cable I'm plugged into right now, coming from upstairs in the bedroom, out the door, down the stairs into this little room. This is so much more house than we needed, but it's really been kind of fun. So it's okay. It's okay.
Now, did you bring the 50-foot Ethernet cable thinking
heck
I might
need
this?
Okay. Well,
never leave home without it.
No, and of course not. Okay, so here. Listen, I know we're going off on a tangent, but they have locked the router in a utility closet with the key. Like, there's no doorknob. It's just a deadbolt in a door. The router is locked inside. So, as you all know, we have to reboot the router from time to time. That's a rite of passage as an American first world country internet user. The router needs rebooted. So instead of letting you into the closet, they have actually wired an outlet in the closet to a switch outside the closet that says router reset on it. So you turn it off with the light switch and turn it back on. It is both the most, it's the stupidest thing and the smartest thing that I have ever seen in one
amazing.
Of these houses.
I've got a good buddy of mine that did something similar, but instead he actually put a plug, a Bluetooth plug, into his outlet, and they can control it with his phone, so he doesn't have to go downstairs and reset his router every time. He can just get on his phone and hit the button that says reset router.
Oh, that's genius.
Yeah.
It's so good.
That's where the Ubiquiti stuff, by the way, pays for itself, because I've owned this now for like 2.5 years, and I have reset it all of one time, and that was when I unplugged it from my old house and moved it to the new one.
Nice. See, you get something that can stand up to the constant use, I guess. I don't know what they have in the closet, but it's a disaster. It hiccups like every 10 minutes. And today is the day I found a live working jack, and today was the last day I was actually working. Go figure.
That is Murphy's Law right there.
So
in full effect.
Yeah. Anyway, y'all want to talk about some news?
I mean, we can.
Something we are in control of?
Well, we can. However, This is the 1 year mark.
Oh.
The 1 year mark from when Donald Trump came on and said, what did he say?
It'll be a miracle. It'll be gone by Easter.
Not only that, but we're in good shape here in the United States.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. By April, it'll just go away.
We didn't have to worry about the China virus, right?
That's right. The China virus.
I remember that. Well, you know, we're at a point now where it seems that there's a little bit of a focus on taking care of the pandemic. I don't know. I don't know whether, regardless of who's in the captain's chair there, it sure seems like the government gives a flip at this point, where they did not appear to give any flips in the previous year. So it's not that I think that science and vaccines and discoveries and all this was going to happen one way or the other.
Oh yeah.
But it sure is nice just to feel like someone cares. It's just like, that's good. At least we got the illusion that there's actually someone at the top that's like, you know what? This is important. I think I'm going to make it a thing that I work on.
I think we make this a priority.
Yeah, it just makes me feel better. Whether it actually made a difference in the speed or resources or however it works, I don't really care. Most of politics is optics.
It is.
Yeah.
Ask Ted Cruz.
Yes, optics. I don't care what his actual intentions were. The story has been told.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's just one of those things. It's just I'm happy to have seen that there is someone trying to at least act like they're doing stuff, which is plenty. Whatever. Anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about Johnson & Johnson, another reputable company. Don't look up talcum powder. One-dose Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine meets criteria as safe and effective. A Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee will hold an all-day meeting on Friday to review the data and is likely to give the vaccine a thumbs up, leading to an expected FDA authorization for the vaccine in adults within the next few days. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine differs from the two already authorized because only one shot is recommended. So, you know, I'm not throwing away my shot. You know what I mean? I don't know why that came to mind. The company also is studying a two-dose regimen, which might prove more effective or more durable, in which case people might be encouraged to get a booster shot. Like the Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech vaccines, the one from J&J underwent a large clinical trial showing its safety and effectiveness. Once the committee gives an okay to the vaccine, it'll be up to the acting FDA commissioner to authorize it, which could happen within a few days. The vaccine is used in South Africa, and the company applied to the EU and the WHO for authorization. J&J agreed to provide 100 million doses of its vaccine in the USA by June, including 20 million by the end of March. Those doses will add to the 300 million doses that Pfizer and Moderna each have promised to deliver. Here's the efficacy of the thing, by the way. The J&J vaccine was shown to be 85% effective in preventing the most severe disease across all regions studied 28 days after the shot and proved more effective over time. No cases of severe disease were reported after day 49 among those who were vaccinated. The company defines severe disease as respiratory failure, shock, organ failure, or the need for treatment in a hospital intensive care unit, which I think is kind of an important distinction. You know, you hear severe and the thought is like, oh, like really bad symptoms. But this is like, these are quite severe situations. Like, does this indicate that if they went to a hospital but not an ICU, that is still not considered severe?
I mean, the way it reads, no.
Yeah, it seems to me like you could have the vaccine, end up at the hospital, but as long as you don't go to the ICU, they're like, well, that's not a severe case.
Yeah.
And they can write it down as like, boof, this is great for you.
Well, the ICUs would be reserved for the ventilators and the people who need the immediate constant supervision, right? So
yeah, so good news. I mean, hey, that's more vaccines with more options. I think this one's still mRNA vaccine, right? It's just a one shot. Oh, this one's a protein one.
No, it's not a protein subunit. It's a viral vector. One. Yeah, this is the
monkey virus one.
It's a viral vector. Yes, it's the same as the Ebola vaccine. So yes,
it's the same as Ebola.
Here's a question for you. Get real time. You go to public health department and you go, shoot me up, doc. See this arm? Right there. Give it to me. And he goes, you know, we could give you the Moderna. We can give you the Pfizer. We can give you the J&J. Or we can give you the AstraZeneca. Would you choose the J&J or the AstraZeneca knowing that Moderna and Pfizer have such great efficacies? And would you choose the Moderna knowing that the side effects, especially of the second after the second shot, are more severe than the Pfizer shot? So would you actually make a choice of a non-Pfizer vaccine?
So one shot, one J&J shot is 85%.
Mm-hmm.
Two Modernas is 95%.
Yep.
10% is a lot of percents.
Ask Ashley at her drinking. It's a hell of a lot of percents.
That's a lot of percents. But but it is one shot, and you're good. I'm not in a high risk category anyway, given my age and health status.
Okay.
I might go one shot. Sounds good. Let's rock and roll.
What about you, Trav?
That's a tough one, but I kind of lean that same way because I'm also not in a high risk category and I work from home. So I'm going to be get the one shot and then isolate myself for however long. I mean, they say the unless I misread that, it seemed like the efficacy went up or your chances of anything bad happening got less after a certain period of time from the one shot. So why not do one shot and just hunker down for, I've already done it for a year. I can go another month.
Yeah.
And then be in good shape. So that's tough. It's tough to say, but I probably would go that route myself.
I mean, yeah. And I guess I understand that. I guess my point here is that if you know something is more effective, if you know something is produces less side effects, and you know something works on variants a little bit better than other things, why on earth would you choose the lesser of the three or the four? I mean, D.H. Dunn brings up a great point. He says, look, I'm just glad that we're able to have these conversations now because 9 months ago, my 9 months ago self was begging for this discussion. But, I mean, yeah. I would love to hear from the audience and from the chat, and send me an email at staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com or call Travis and tell him. But I'd love to hear from you guys and try to understand what would be your driving what are the driving factors in your decision? What influences your decision on which vaccine you want to get? Is it just one what's available, or can you be more selective? If you have the opportunity to be more selective, will you be?
Laziness and it's good enough. That's what the driver would be for Johnson & Johnson. I don't want to have to go to the doctor twice. And 85% is a lot, and it's even 10% more than they were just hoping for when they initially started looking at vaccines.
Yeah.
They were like, if we can get even 70, 75, we'll be happy.
Yeah.
And they got 95. This is still exceeding their expectations, even if it is 85 versus 95. And you're looking at a, you know, that's not it for you. It could be great. It could keep you asymptomatic completely. You might be a boss.
Yeah.
For that other guy, he might end up in the hospital for a minute just to get checked out.
Yeah.
I don't know. The thing is, they're not going to give you a choice. They're going to say, this is the one we got. This is the one we're sticking in your arm. You're going to go, okay.
No, actually they do. So we were at the Friday Center this past week. The in-laws got their second shot, and they now have, whenever you go up, if you're coming in for your first shot, you could choose the Moderna or the Pfizer. They have both. And so you can go to whichever line you want to go to based on which vaccine you want to receive.
But how does the common man even know what to do? You and I know because you're a scientist and you tell me. But if it's just me and I'm looking up Pfizer and Moderna, I'm like, I don't know. They're both mRNA vaccines. They both work. What difference does it make? And if you're going to make me choose between those two, I'd choose Moderna.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've done more research over the years. It's a more stable vaccine. And that's, I mean, for storage more than anything probably. But
it is.
It still gives me warm fuzzies to know that their business exists because of mRNA.
Yeah.
Vaccine, and that's what's driven them to do this at all. Versus Pfizer's like, hey, BioNTech said they can help us. You know, and
BioNTech has been doing the same thing Moderna's been doing. So
sure, but it's I don't know, man. It's not the thing is it's not Harris Teeter brand Frosted Flakes. It's
right.
Frosted Flakes. It's Frosted Flakes yeah. Fruit Loops.
Well,
they're both great cereals. None of them are cheaper than the other.
We say that, but then we talk about how the efficacy of the AstraZeneca is less. So we are talking about something that potentially may shield you a little bit less. So now what we're talking about is, okay, well, these people get this vaccine, which works a little bit better, and these people get this vaccine, which works a little bit worse. And so now are we creating this artificial construct where we're able to discriminate based on who gets what vaccine?
AstraZeneca is a Malto meal of the vaccine world.
I mean, I'm not.
What I heard. I heard you got to get down on the bottom shelf, get the bag cereal.
Yeah, it's
the reach the all the way in the back of the...
Where the bag cereal is, where you, instead of Corn Pops, you get Corn Puffarinos. It's just, it's all high fructose corn syrup at the end of the day.
It's not Cap'n Crunch, it's Commander Crispy.
That's what it is. What are the Cheerios are Ringos now instead of Cheerios. That's
right. Exactly.
Oh, what was my favorite? Apples. It's not Apple Jacks. I used to buy Apple Dapples because they were $2 cheaper.
Did they ever actually satisfy you the same way that the originals?
Apple Dapples were great. They were $2 cheaper, and there was more in the bag.
The Honey Nut Ringos were not the same as the Honey Nut Cheerios. Just going to throw that out there.
That's true, and the Frosted Bricks were not as good as the Frosted Mini Wheats.
There.
Yeah.
You want to know what's worse? COVID. COVID, California's coronavirus strains.
There
so,
you go.
Apparently, there is a new coronavirus strain that looks increasingly dangerous. Quote, the devil is already here. That's an interesting, salacious title. I want to read more. A coronavirus variant that probably emerged in May and surged to become the dominant strain in California not only spreads more readily than its predecessors, but also evades antibodies generated by the vaccines or prior infection, as is associated with severe illness, researchers say. In a study that helps explain the state's dramatic holiday surge in COVID-19 cases and deaths, and portends further trouble ahead, scientists at UC San Francisco said the cluster of mutations that characterize the homegrown strain should mark it as a variant of concern on par with those from the UK, South Africa, and Brazil. We have been facing an onslaught of more transmissible strains coming from UK, but this rival strain is just as worrisome and will probably account for 90% of California's infections by the end of the month, the researchers say. Quote, unquote, the devil is already here, said Dr. Chu, who is leading a team of geneticists and a whole wide range, a multidisciplinary team who's analyzing this variant. I wish it were different, but the science is a science. The new evidence the California variants could make people sicker and vaccines less effective should spur more intensive efforts to drive down infections. Those should include both public health measures such as masks, limiting public activities, and a campaign for rapid vaccines. Blah, 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 blah. The new findings do not show the homegrown strain was the principal driver in the California's dramatic run-up in infections during the fall and the winter. However, she said she cautioned that the risk of death may not necessarily be a sign that the variant is more lethal, rather that it has simply been more reflective of its general transmissibility, caused hospitals to become overwhelmed and healthcare resources to be stretched so thin that more deaths were a result. Bottom line, man, these variants, the coronavirus doesn't mutate nearly as rapidly as some of these other viruses, but it does mutate whenever you get enough people infected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The spike protein is going to mutate, period. End of discussion. And it's funny that a lot of these variants are based on similar mutations in the same area of the spike protein. So it's telling us that, these mutations that are happening all across the world are happening in very same places. So it's a thing. In California, it looks like it's maybe suffering from the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that we wanted to we wanted to deal with when it came to getting vaccinated. It's like getting vaccinated so we can keep the thing from spreading, so we can keep the thing from mutating and needing to vaccinate ourselves with new stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're just chasing it at that point.
Pretty much. You could chase it or you could trick the novel coronavirus with a fake handshake.
Ooh, there we go.
Yeah, so fooling the novel coronavirus once, and it can't cause infection of cells, new research suggests. Scientists have developed protein fragments called peptides that fit snugly into a groove in the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein that it would normally use to access a host cell. These peptides effectively trick the virus into shaking hands with a replica rather than with the actual protein on a cell surface that lets the virus in. Previous research has determined that the novel coronavirus binds to a receptor protein on a target cell surface called ACE2. This receptor is located on certain types of human cells in the lung and nasal cavity, providing SARS-CoV-2 many access points to infect the body. For this work, Ohio State University scientists designed and tested peptides that resemble ACE2 enough to convince the coronavirus to bind to them, and an action that blocks the virus's ability to actually get inside the cell. Our goal is that anytime SARS-CoV-2 comes into contact with the peptides, the virus will be inactivated. This is because the virus spike protein is already bound to something that it needs to use in order to bind to the cell, said Amit Sharma, co-leader of the study and assistant professor of veterinary biosciences at Ohio State. To do this, we have to get the virus while it's still outside the cell. The Ohio State team envisions delivering these manufactured peptides in a nasal spray or aerosol surface disinfectant, among other applications. Points to an agent prevents their entry into target cells. With the results we generated with these peptides, we are well positioned to move into product development steps, said Ross LaRue, co-lead, author and research assistant, professor of pharmaceutics and pharmacology at Ohio State. So they're trying to get it before it can get to you. Which is pretty interesting.
That's kind of like that. What's that stuff that you rub up your nose so you don't get a cold?
Mentholatum?
No. Yeah. Okay, Grandma.
Vicks Vapor Rub. It's called mentholatum.
Mentholatum. My grandma used to put mentholatum on her nose every night before bed. I just remember the smell of mentholatum is just immediately takes me to my grandma.
Yep.
But no, the Zicam. Zicam is the thing that you like swab up your nose. It's just a bunch of zinc, basically, that's meant to eliminate cold virus, you know, so it doesn't grow as fast. Seems like this is a similar idea. Use a nasal spray or put something in the way so that this thing can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's your body. It's an interesting way to think about it, like keep it from getting inside by tricking it and making it think it's already bound to the cell.
Yeah.
So then even if the virus gets into your system, it has nothing to bind to.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Teflon-ing your insides.
Oh, great. That sounds really safe. Way to put that together, Travis. But Jacob, I guess I got one question for you on this one. Mm-hmm. You've actually brought stuff into product development and into product. What's the timeline on something? Because the way he speaks makes you think, oh, something like this would be, we're in product development mode. Is this a year? 2 years?
It's probably going to be a while. I mean, the entry stages of product development then have to go through some kind of trial or, so we're talking years probably.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. So
how about this?
Giving you a false hope.
How about this? He's a researcher and a professor at Ohio State. That means he's an academic researcher. And most academics don't necessarily understand the full timeline of product development cycles. Just because they don't go through it. A lot of academics just have their stuff picked up and licensed by these other companies, and the companies are the ones who actually go through the process of going through the trials and product development stages, et cetera. And it's years before they take the research that academics have done and turn it into products. So most academics just don't understand. Well, I mean, they understand in theory. I mean, I'm not downplaying the academics. They're usually the ones who come up with the brilliant ideas. I'm not sure that they have that full connectivity relative to how to bring something like this to the market.
Gotcha. I just wanted to clarify that as we were moving along.
Yeah.
Speaking of clarification, that's not even a good segue. Philippines offers to let nurses work in Britain and Germany in exchange for coronavirus vaccines. Doing a little bit of a swap here. The Philippines will let thousands of healthcare workers, mostly nurses, take up jobs in Britain and Germany if the two countries agree to donate coronavirus vaccines. Britain's health ministry said it was not interested in such a deal, and its priority was to use shots domestically, but added it would share surplus vaccine internationally in the future. That seems like a normal thing that they would say. The Philippines, which has among Asia's highest number of coronavirus cases, has relaxed a ban on deploying its healthcare workers overseas, but still limits the number of medical professionals leaving the country to 5,000 a year. Alice Vispris, director of the director of the Labor Ministry's International Affairs Bureau, said the Philippines was open to lifting the cap in exchange for vaccines from Britain and Germany, which it would use to inoculate outbound workers and hundreds of thousands of Filipino repatriates. Britain said there were 11,000 more nurses working in the NHS than last year, said that while it was grateful to the 30,000 Filipinos working for the NHS, Britain did not need to trade vaccines for more. They basically have no plans to agree to a vaccine deal just for recruitment. We've confirmed that we will share any surplus vaccines in the future, for example, through the COVAX International Procurement Pool. The Philippines wants to secure 148 million doses of vaccines altogether, while Britain has ordered more than 400 million doses, six times its population. So Britain's going to have a lot of vaccines, so they expect to be able to share a lot of vaccines. Mm-hmm. This is such an interesting race and an interesting trade. Like, you kind of start to see how smaller countries depend on larger countries for their scraps, for lack of a better word. Like, I think this is why we have this hierarchy of countries, like US and Canada and UK and Russia and China and all this. And then it's like all these other people just get everything that they drop off the table. And it's really fascinating to me, because it's like, how do you get where you want to go if it's so hard, you know, to compete on a global scale? Like, you've got countries that are growing economically. Like, I think Rwanda is actually a country that's growing economically in a huge manner, with like their technology infrastructure is better than ours in a lot of places. And we always think, being the American idiots that we are, oh, that's in Africa, that must be like the jungle or something. But it's totally not. Like, Pixar has offices in Africa for round the clock rendering stuff. How do they get what they need? I mean, they're like out there pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, and then it's like, hey, we'll literally give you people if you give us a vaccine. Like, it just seems, it's just a wild situation. I don't know. That's just me musing. I don't really need answers, but it's just, it's interesting to see it all play out where we're looking at it so closely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you've got things like, well, did the WHO try to drum up some money so that they could pay for vaccines for countries that can't necessarily afford the vaccines? And then you have countries like the United States, and do we have a moral obligation to help companies produce more so that these countries can actually get access to the vaccine, especially in third world countries that may not necessarily have the funds to be able to buy the Pfizer vaccines? And then you have Pfizer be more altruistic as a company and just provide them for free. And I mean, so all of these things are now in question. And that's, I think, part of the reason why it's so important to maintain your humanity through this, is that there will be people struggling with this. Everybody's not getting vaccinated on day one. Everybody's not even going to get vaccinated on day 365. There's still going to be a whole lot of people around this world that don't have access to vaccines even a year from now. So I think we still have to remain cognizant of that fact and diligent to make sure that they can still get the vaccine and are protected, so it doesn't happen and doesn't continue to mutate, and we don't have to continue to try to make these vaccines across the world. Mm. There's my soapbox for you.
Well said.
Anyway, speaking of vaccines, let's talk about Pfizer. Pfizer begins a COVID-19 vaccine clinical trial focusing on pregnant women. This is actually interesting, because pregnant women are in a category that have not really been, there are very few people that could actually tell pregnant women whether or not they should or should not receive the vaccine. I don't think anybody has real information, and so this is an interesting one. As more people receive the COVID-19 vaccine, pregnant women are left to decide if and when they should take that step. These women include health. One of these women includes healthcare worker Lindsay Yoxheimer, who ultimately decided to get her shot. I very quickly had to make the decision based on no data, she said. She's a nurse at UNC Health. However, that may not be the case for other pregnant women much longer. Pfizer has announced a new clinical trial vaccine that focuses on expecting mothers. Pregnant women are more likely to get severely ill. They're more likely to be in the ICU. They're more likely to be on a ventilator. And there is some suggestion that they're even at a higher risk of death in pregnancy from COVID, says Brenna Hughes, who is a maternal fetal specialist at Duke. Hughes says that she received mixed responses from pregnant women about taking the vaccine, which is why she says critical research could not have come at a better time. We need data to show the enough patients have been vaccinated that we can ensure it's safe for them to get vaccinated. Around 4,000 women, 24 to 34 weeks along in their pregnancy, will take part in the international study for up to 10 months. The first doses will be administered in the United States. Pfizer stated that they're taking steps after seeing success in vaccinating other groups and protecting this and future generations, saying in part, "It is critical that we develop a vaccine that is safe and effective for this population." William Gruber, MD, senior vice president, blah, 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 blah. He's a Pfizer dude. This is a great discussion. If you look at the study, it's a 10-month-long study, but I'm sure that they're going to have to make sure that the baby doesn't have any long-term ramifications from this vaccine, and it doesn't pass to the baby, and maybe they might even gain some immunity based on from the mother. So this is much needed research to help women who really don't have any drivers for a decision other than, yep, yeah. I think it's right.
Seems like a good idea. It doesn't shock me that pregnant women get more severely ill, considering their lungs are shoved into their throat at one point when they're pregnant.
No,
I have no doubt that is enough of a stress on your body. The adding COVID on top of it, that's not a surprise to me. And I hope that the data comes out of here looking good for them. I think that'd be great.
Yeah. If you die from COVID-19 vaccine in Japan, the government will give your family over 44 million yen. Japan began distributing the COVID-19 vaccine on February 17th, which is a little bit behind some other developed countries. They seem to be trying to do it as organized fashion as possible, staggering vaccinations to medical staff, the elderly, people with health conditions, and everything else in that order. It's not without its challenges, however. One of them remains Japanese people's general skittishness when it comes to vaccines. It seems a little surprising in a country that's all too ready to slip on a mask, but fear of the side effects and a general attitude of "it probably won't happen to me" has kept flu shot rates lingering at a steady 50% year after year, despite the fact that in Japan the number of flu deaths in 2018 was about the same as COVID-19 deaths in 2020. Some of that fear that the prevention might be worse than the disease may be swayed by a recent report that the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare will reward a lump sum of 44,200,000 yen to the surviving family of any person who dies as the result of COVID-19 vaccine, and even cover funeral costs of up to 209,000 yen. It doesn't even matter if there was negligence on the part of the medical staff or the vaccine producer. In other words, there's no strings attached. This is actually a long-standing policy of the ministry, which covers any kind of vaccination, not just COVID-19. However, it recently made news when it was brought up by the health minister, Norishia Tamura, at a budget meeting. Judging by the comments, a lot of people were unaware of this policy. Their comments like, "Well, that's some news. Let's hurry up and die." Or, "Wow, it says you can get an annual 5 million yen if you're severely disabled. I like those odds." "Let the death game begin" was another good quote. The last comment of "seems simple, but is it difficult to prove that it was in fact the vaccine that caused the death?" And that comment seems to kind of show a bit of a bigger problem. According to reported Diamond Online, the ambiguousness of vaccine side effects tends to work in the favor of victims in court. As a result, Japanese pharmaceutical companies have been reluctant to produce vaccines in recent years because the financial risks outweigh the benefits. This combined with the fact that much of the public isn't even aware of the policy would suggest that it's probably more intended to coax Japanese companies to produce their own vaccines by reducing their liability. Diamond Online does point out, though, that even if somebody gets the money from the government, they can still sue the company that made the vaccine. And that's one of the bigger problems. The article goes on to talk about there no companies in Japan have been working on a COVID vaccine at all. By the way, I did the conversion. 44 million yen is about $416,000.
I just did the exact same thing.
I did the same thing, got a different figure. I love that we all, like, Jacob got 425, I got 420, and you got 416.
I guess it's based on the where you went and the daily rate and whether it's gone up or down.
Probably.
So, yeah, so it's an interesting idea of the government is like, and I did not realize that the Japanese people were that skittish about vaccines.
Yeah.
At all.
That surprises me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it does or not. I guess I ask Ashley because I don't know enough about Japanese culture to know whether or not that's surprising or not. So.
Yeah. True. I mean, it's, I guess I've been shocked by a lot of things regarding vaccines and why people don't get them. I mean, it's not, this is just another story of a subset of people that just don't want to do it, don't trust it. And I like the thing that I clued in on there was that it probably won't happen to me.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Because that's true. You probably won't die based on the stats. But I say you probably won't. Yeah, this is the first illness that I can remember ever dealing with where people I know people who have been disastrously affected by it. Like, usually when a disease is bad, like, I don't know anybody that's died of the flu, but I know people mm-hmm. die of the flu. I don't know anybody who knows anybody that's died of the flu that I'm aware of, but I know that it happens. This, I know people who have died. Yeah. I know people who have reduced lung capacity. I now know Jacob who knows a guy who knows a guy. You know, like, and that's one of those things where you're like, this is more prevalent than something else. Or I wouldn't be able to reach out to my first layer of my social circle and see damage. You know, it's not the same. So you can say it probably won't happen to me, and you're probably right. But the likelihood of it happening to you is much higher than other things. And I think we've said it before, but there are fates worse than death.
Yes.
You know, once you're dead, you don't really care how you feel anymore. You're gone. But when you're dealing with reduced lung capacity for the rest of your life and a cold puts you on the floor, that's bad. That's not good. There's a guy I listened to on YouTube or watch on YouTube. He's a computer tech YouTuber. He's got COVID, had it for 2 weeks. He's like, some days I have energy. Some days I go up the stairs and I am winded. And he's an exerciser. An exerciser? He's lost a lot of weight in his life and has tried to keep it off and stay fit. And he's wrecked. Just absolutely wrecked. And I don't like those stories because like, that's yet another person I've seen, I'm familiar with, that it has long-lasting issues.
Yeah. And the other thing I think we need to recognize here is that, you know, the number of people that die per year of the flu is somewhere around 50 million. I mean, there have been some years like, you know, this year, I think it's been less than 9 million. There are some years like last year that was 60 some million, right? Or 60 some thousand. I said million, but 9,000 versus 60,000. So what we're talking about here is, you know, a couple weeks in COVID time, especially at its peak. I mean, we were seeing 3,000 deaths per day at its peak. I mean, we were seeing a 9/11 a day. And you only need 20 days to get to 60,000 people, right? So you would have, in 20 days, you would have as many deaths as an entire year as the flu, right? So
yeah.
I think that just the likelihood of you bumping into somebody that is seriously affected by this is much, much, much higher, just because of the death rate of this.
Yeah. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. It's not, you know, it is serious, and it's serious if not from the stats alone, the fact that you probably know someone who's been negatively impacted at this point.
It's a good point.
And I mean, you look at it, you're like 300 million people in the U.S., and 100,000 sounds like a lot, but out of 300 million, that's still over an entire country. You're still looking at a really spread out population of people, but it's still a real bad number, and it's still, even if spread out, you know, spread over our giant piece of bread that is the United States, that's still a lot of cases that you could come in contact with.
Yeah,
that could hurt you in a way. But yeah, those are some good stories tonight. For sure. How long have we been going, Jacob? I feel like we've been on this for days.
The uptime is 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Okay, that checks out. How strongly do you feel about a deep dive? You got one?
Just the masks. Our mask here to stay.
Oh yeah, we can go there. Let's go there. Let's keep it. Let's keep the train rolling.
And by the way, if anybody has any thoughts, we want to hear them. Definitely call in or send a email, because this is a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So masks.
Yeah, Steven, our masks here to stay.
So one person would be real happy to hear my answer, and that one person is Landon, who was here with us the first 10 weeks of the show. We mentioned multiple times. Landon would love to know that I think they are here to stay for at least the next couple years. I've thought about getting a vaccine. I've thought about what that means for my mobility, and I can't imagine going out without a mask at this point. It's just not – I haven't even really considered the idea of going out without a mask. If I'm somewhere – like if I'm going on a stroll outside, I'm not really worried about it. But if I'm going to a store or I'm going where there are people, like a park where there are people actually out and about, probably going to put one on. And it's not weird to me anymore. It now feels normal. I do kind of want to build a Mandalorian mask and wear that.
It's not a mask. It's a helmet.
I want to wear a helmet. That I wear a mask underneath, because the helmet would not be enough. Just to make sure that people know that this is the way. And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see, like you said, at least for the next year or two, you know, having a simple, like even just having a simple cloth mask like in your car, or that you throw in a pocket so you have it if you need it. Because you're right. Like if I'm just going to go out for a walk, or I'm going to go hike a trail or something, I don't necessarily need to take one with me. But like I have a mask that I keep in my Jeep. And that way, if for some reason I leave the house and it's like, oh, I need to stop while I'm out. Like, you know, I might have to leave my house to take packages to the FedEx drop off where I'm just putting them in a drop box. I don't need a mask for that. I'm not interacting with anybody. I'm not coming into contact with another human. But then I might have to stop on my way back. So I always have a mask in the car now. And sort of the same idea. I can see that being a normal thing for quite a while.
Hell, I even put the mask on whenever I go to the drop box, even if I don't come into contact with people. I think you guys are right. I mean, I travel for business a lot, and I don't think I will travel without a mask anytime soon. I can't see myself getting on a plane right now not wearing a mask. Hell, I was vaccinated not too long ago, and it hasn't even crossed my mind to not put on a mask before I even leave the truck. I mean, I don't know. I still have the 100% mentality that a mask is going on. The funny thing is that I had to quick run into the grocery store last week one day. Just because we had forgotten a couple of things. So I was like, oh, let me just quick run in and run out. And I'm still wearing my N95 in the grocery store, because I'm like, no, I don't care. I'm not even going to put myself at risk, even if it's the smallest percentage chance after getting vaccinated. I'm just not going to do it. And that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know if once we get to a point where a lot more people are vaccinated and we feel a little more comfortable ditching the mask. I mean, at what point do we ditch the mask? What piece of information do we need to have as a country, maybe as the president or whoever, decision makers, what pieces of information do they need to say, hey guys, you remember those masks? You can tear them up.
I've thought about that, and I don't know that there's a piece of information. I think at some point it'll have to become the individual person's decision. You know, it'll have, because I think you can at some point say, well, 75% of the population has been either vaccinated or has had it. And you also have to look at it from your local community. You can't just go like federal government says X. You have to go like, what is, in our case, Wake County? What does Wake County say is the number of cases per day or whatever at this point? I know I'm vaccinated, so I'm not super worried. This, what is the chicken wing number, Jacob? What is the chicken wing number?
That's right.
What is trivia at Clouds Brewing with chicken wings and beer?
Yeah.
What is that? That's the only, that is honest to God, the only number I care about. When
what is the chicken wing
am
number?
I going to eat chicken wings with my friends at Cloud Brewing, drink beer, and do trivia? That's all I care about. That is all I care about. And when they finally give me something that makes, to be honest, you, what makes you comfortable, because I think you're probably the strictest of the people I know. If you're comfortable with Clouds Brewing and chicken wings and beer, I will dance on the rooftop. I will sing songs to the glory of vaccinations. I will praise Dr. Fauci. I will send him a gift basket from edible arrangements, whatever that crap is. I'll be like, I got to eat chicken wings this weekend. Mm-hmm. Here's some pineapple that looks like a flower.
Yeah, it's a tough call, right? I mean, if you look at the numbers in North Carolina, we're still one of the top five states in transmission. We're still having over 3,000 positive cases per day. It's going down, but we're still way past where we were right before the election. I mean, triple the number of cases per day where we were before the election in November. So, I mean, we're still at a huge rate of transmission, comparatively speaking, to where we were last year in October. So I guess I look at those numbers and I go, holy shit, we are not out of the woods yet. And what the interesting thing is yeah, we're down, because before we were seeing 7, 8, 10, 12, 15,000 new cases per day. But what's interesting is the number of people getting tested is also going down. So fewer people are getting tested.
I'm telling you, that's what the Big T said. He said, do less testing, get less numbers. Mm-hmm. We do less testing, we do less numbers. It's not wrong. Yep. That is accurate. Wrong, but accurate.
It also goes to show you that we potentially could be looking at the wrong numbers. I mean, we should be looking at what percentage of cases, what percentage of tests are coming back positive, as opposed to what the overall true number of cases is, because it's never going to be true. I mean, yeah, sure, we saw 3,000 cases today. Great. But how many people didn't get tested? How many people are asymptomatic? How many people are symptomatic and just said, you know something, I just got the sniffles. It's allergies. And
no, heck yeah. Springtime allergy. I've had allergies for 2 weeks. I feel like for the last 2 weeks, like I have not done anything risky. Mm-hmm. Stop it. Because I did the same thing when it first hit. I had allergies in the spring, and I'm like, I've got freaking COVID. I don't know how, but I got it. It got me. But it's like, oh, no, it's pollen season. It's because allergies are starting to work their way in now. I had this lung thing back at the end of February. I actually went to the doctor for it. I was like, I'm having this wheeze, like this uncomfortable lung feeling. And he's like, we don't see anything weird. And you don't have COVID? I said, no, I don't have COVID. It's in China. Because it was in China still.
Did you just go there, Steve?
That's look, I didn't say it was the China virus.
Yeah, that's true. What did he call it the one time? The Wuhan flu?
We called it the Kung Flu.
Kung Flu, that's what it was.
We called it the Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang virus.
We're just so stupid and we deserve it.
God almighty, we were dumb. That first episode, I don't want to listen to it, but I bet we were just flaming idiots.
We are so stupid. It's ridiculous. But yeah, so I had that wheeze. So that wheeze came back and I'm like, why is my lungs, why can I not breathe? And Stephanie goes, when did this happen last time? I said, like late February. She's like, oh, okay. What time is it, Steve? I'm like, I guess it's late February again. I must have some sort of like seasonal allergy. yeah, calm down. You've got a seasonal allergy. You're going to be okay. I'm like, I have cancer. My parents smoked when I was a kid. I'm going to die. So stupid.
Calm down, you hypochondriac. You're fine.
Oh, I don't get sick that often, so it freaks me out. Speaking of not getting sick,
yeah,
the mask thing, I've learned over the last year that we are in far greater control of our own health than I ever really realized, because I haven't been sick in like a year or longer because of mask wearing and staying in and all this stuff. And if anything, I do think Kelly's right about trying to continue wearing a mask when I know I'm ill and I go somewhere, because it protects other people. It clearly is effective at doing that.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd like to see that as woven into our fabric as a culture. I don't think it's going to work. I think there'll be a lot of us that do it, a lot of us that don't. We're not going to be like a lot of the Asian countries that are just like, bam, mask all the time.
Yeah.
There's going to be more people doing it now. It's going to be, I want to say it's going to be less of a social stigma to wear a mask and get poked at, but you know, there's still going to be people that do, because people are idiots.
Of course.
But you will see more people that will continue to wear masks into forever when they're feeling sick. Yeah. I think it's people will get more comfortable with that idea. I know I will be.
Yeah,
me too. 100%.
Well, good. Hey, man, we want to hear what you guys think about masks. Do you want to keep wearing them? More than that, we also want to know what vaccine you're going to pick, given the option. Yeah. J&J, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, BioNTech, or Moderna. Which one are you saying? Stick that thing in my arm. I want that one. And your reasoning. All that kind of stuff would be really cool to hear from you guys. If you want to share that with us, you can. staringatgoatspodcast@gmail.com. And Travis, what's our voicemail?
231-486-5401.
That's right. 231-486-5401.
We still have zero emails in the inbox.
No voicemails.
You can also tweet at us, though, if you prefer your brevity. @staring_goats on Twitter is a good way to do that. If you want to support the show, you can do that at twodorks.net/support. Just even $1 a month is kind of nice. We're like, oh, cool, that paid for something this month. It's really nice. You can join our patrons, Hammer Dwarf, Jesse, Og, Adam, and Christina of Geekheim, Oddly Normal One, and our parents, in supporting us through that mechanism. You guys are awesome. Another way to support is just tell people about the show. I think that's one of the biggest things. Share it on your Twitters. Share it on your TikToks, your Instagrams, whatever the kids are doing these days. We'd love to see some more people showing up for the show. But we appreciate you guys being here for sure. You mean the world to us. And with that, I think we'll see you all next time on Staring at Goats.
Done.
We did it.
Another one bites dust.
What about that intro that we Another jacked up? When did you start the intro?
About a third of the way through your rant.
Oh, really? Okay, so you got way in there.
Yeah, I hit the button on this, but I didn't hit the button on this. I need one of your little Streamlabs things that goes bloop, and it just goes ahead and starts, and yeah.
Yeah, the whole machine started. Well, Travis, if you could send another intro.
What I can do is pull the video off of Twitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just strip out the audio there and then just cut it.
Yeah. If you want to do that, that would be great.
Figure that out. That would be awesome. And then send it to me and I'll put it on Anchor.
No. And yeah. I've still got to send you the recording anyway, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll work. I can grab that because I gotta edit the Highlander show tonight anyway, so I can be downloading that while I edit.
Yeah. Kelly, I think we have to be partnered to be on to create a team.
Yeah.
I don't think we can make just a stream team.
I don't think so, because I know I'm on a stream team with
Diamond Club.
Diamond Club, yeah. But they, I mean,
they're partnered for sure, right?
Yeah, Night Attack definitely is.
Yeah. I think you have to be partnered. That'd be cool, though.
Yeah. Whenever we get it, we'll do it.
Yeah, when we get partner, we just need 75 average concurrent viewers. Not that hard.
Nope.
The 75's hard to hit.
Oh, yeah.
That is. Like, the amount of time you need to put into it, that you can do pretty easily. It's that 75 average.
Yeah. But the cool thing is once you're partnered, you get like a rep at Twitch that you can call and talk to about your issues.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great. You're like, hey, Twitch rep, here's a thing. And they're like, oh, cool, yeah.
Can
you grab someone by the testicles and say, fix my stuff.
The VOD. Oh, you know what? I know how I can do it. All right. I got it figured out.
You over there engineering?
Yeah. So I'll get that to you